Welcome to the Grappling Grappling Rewind Podcast.
Welcome to this week on the Grappling Rewind Podcast. In this week's show, we're going to recap who's number one, Canon Duarte versus Rodolfo Vieira. We're going to recap Fight to Win 159, and we're going to preview Third Coast Grappling 5 and Submission Underground, whatever Submission Underground number this is, 19.
74.
As always in the show, I'm your host, Mangel, the co-host.
Josh.
How you doing, Josh?
Hanging in there.
We are once again remote. Again, apologies last week for not getting the video show up on YouTube. I just was unable to sync all of the footage and I couldn't get it done. Going to work it again this week. Regardless, the show will go up. It might only be audio again as we try to figure out the remote situation, but, you know, working to bring you the show as best we can when remote. Josh, we got some news this week. Not a ton of news, but still a few fun things here and there. Spider has finally announced its event coming back. We knew this already, but spring 2021, they now have also announced the rest of the matches on that event, and they look like some good matches.
Hell yeah.
So
Hokage is on there. They popped him in that. I completely forgot that he took one of the spots, so that's awesome.
Mm-hmm. I actually am having trouble finding, Josh, you sent it to me earlier in the day, and I'm looking at the Spider Korea Instagram, and it has the blank matches, so regardless, we've talked about it, we'll talk about it closer as it gets there in spring 2021, so it's still, you know, a number of months away at this point, but, you know, they're coming back, so that's cool. In other news, apparently the Guinness Book of World Records has, like, given Mikey the record for fastest submission in, like, a black belt finals that previously Comprito had. It was 17 seconds. Mikey got it a couple years ago, 2018, in 16 seconds. Or, yeah, 16 seconds. And Josh is extremely skeptical that this actually occurred.
Well, I don't think it's, like, official yet. I think it's the IBJJF saying, here is this. This is what's going on now. Somebody beat that record. So, recognize it. So, yeah. That's kind of dumb.
But, regardless, It's cool that Mikey is potentially being recognized for the fastest sub. I'll believe it when he posts the Instagram over the plaque, but we all know that he got the fastest sub, so that's cool. Let's see what else. Oh, our top 10 show of the year is coming out in a couple weeks. Typically, we do that in the lull with Christmas. So the team is getting together all of our top 10 various things. It's always a show I love, so look out for that in a couple of weeks. Making our list, checking it twice. Got to find out, you know, what events actually happened. What actually happened this year? Let's see. Oh, in other news, Josh, you kind of gave me some more information about this. There was a really big judo event in Japan this week for what weight class was it to determine who was going to make the Olympic team?
66 kilograms. It was for who was going to get the spot on the Japanese team for the Olympics, whenever that actually happens.
Allegedly going to happen at some point in the future. I forget who it was again. It was two guys. I watched the entire match. I think it's almost like 20 minutes. It goes into golden score. Again, we used to cover judo, I think 3 years ago on the Grappling Rewind, like right at the beginning, we covered judo. And then
same time we covered sumo wrestling.
We covered sumo for like a year. We covered sumo for a good amount of time because you actually understood sumo. And both of us were not super up to date with judo. And we also realized that there was an enormous amount of judo to cover. And we just weren't specced to do that at that time. So we kind of stayed in our lane, which is covering BJJ. But, yes. You know.
It's between Maruyama and Abe.
And I think Abe took that via golden score via like Wazari, I think. Yeah. Good match. Really interesting match. Slower, definitely, but still huge high stakes match. I think like 400,000 people were watching that match live.
The link to find it is still on Travis Stevens' Instagram. So if you go to Judo Silencer on Instagram, you should be able to find that. It's the link inside of his profile.
Yeah. Also taking place this week, Ethan Krellenstein he won an event that I kind of was flew under the radar, didn't know. Looks like TMS GP. It looks great. Ukraine. The production quality on it looks fantastic. So we're going to probably...
They have a lot of people on it too, just like not just local people. And then they were like, let's throw Ethan Krellenstein in here. You know, there was a mixture of people.
I think it was in Istanbul.
But I thought it was in Kiev, but, you know, okay. Maybe I'm just wrong.
But regardless, I mean, it's the mission submission and event came out. YouTube, it is up under TMS League is the YouTube page. Event production quality looks amazing. I just came across it. I think Josh sent it to me this morning, so I haven't got a chance to watch the event, but it looked like it was produced really well. If you're listening to the show, go and check it out because it's cool to see, like, European promotions that have insane production value, also featuring guys that we know. So we may talk about it a little more next week. But I just found out about it this morning. So, definitely take a look at that. Other than that, Josh, do you have any other news?
No, I do not.
All right. So let's move on to the recap section. Moving on to the recap for who's number one, Kainan Duarte versus Rodolfo Vieira. Josh, let's start off with this match. This was a 205-pound matchup. And what do you want to say? What do you want to start with this?
With the Kainan match about how he just marked Rodolfo, like, I did not expect that at all. Like
we knew Kainan was good and we knew he was next level, but I expected it to be like, I expected Kainan to sub him. I kind of didn't mention it last week because I was like, I don't want to be wrong, but I did not expect it to happen this quickly and with this level of like opposition from Vieira.
Oh, he beat the shit out of him. Dude. Like, That's not even putting it like lightly. He just beat the shit out of him. And what's funny is you saw it earlier in the night with Ty Rotolo. It's like all of the Atos guys, when it comes to like no-gi now, are all doing these collar ties and like almost tie plum clinch, where they're going, you know, double hands on the back of the head and either trying to foot sweep or just like wrangle them by their neck, or they're trying like Russians or slide bys or things like that. And it's just like
the level of stand up and like the style of stand up that we're seeing from Atos is super aggressive now, in a way that it kind of was before, but I think we're seeing that aggressiveness with a refinement of stand up, and those guys are now super dangerous in the stand up. Like, they can now transition off, and we're starting to see like collar tie wrestling in earnest from those guys in jiu-jitsu.
They're doing a lot of like Greco-esque type stuff where they're staying like up top for body locks and things, but they're also mixing in like knee taps and things like that, and it's pretty wild. And again, like, this blew my mind how quick this match went by.
How long was it? Like 2 minutes?
Two and a half minutes, something like that. But Vieira, like, he looked lost almost. And what's funny is, like, after last week, I had gone down in my basement and I was looking for something and happened upon an old Gracie magazine with
Rodolfo. Would have been 2013, I think, is when in the year it was?
12.
It was 2012 magazine. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
and it had Rodolfo on the cover of it, and it had Buchecha misspelled on the bottom.
Yes.
Old spelling, yeah. Of Buchecha.
Seeing Rodolfo just get kind of like big brothered, essentially, was pretty wild.
Yeah, so Kainan is, dude, he's of the next generation, gets it done via like a standing rear naked choke. The sequence to the back to get the choke was beautiful.
I thought he was gonna do the triangle from the back again. Yeah. I was like, this is not about to happen.
I didn't know, because he was a little low, and I didn't know if he would climb up the back, but Rodolfo being like, kind of standing up in that way, I was kind of speechless. I don't have a whole lot. Like, Kainan just showed why he is one of the top guys in the world. Like, again, your ADCC 2019, you know, plus 99 kilogram champion, few men in the world batter than him right now. And showed it. Now he's off suspension for IBJJF. We're going to see, again, we're going to see a lot more of Kainan Duarte, and this sort of is a not a big changing of the guard moment, but it kind of a cementing of the modern jiu-jitsu players. And like, oh yeah, there's been a ton of development in the last even few years. And that
now, you know, I'm even more excited now for Kainan to go against Gordon again.
Yeah, I'm super excited. He had like some really good call-outs in the post-fight. I think he talked about wanting to fight, might have been Penna. It was Penna in the gi, and then he wanted to go against Gordon and against, I'm blanking on who the other Nogi guy was.
As soon as this match ended, I was ready to go to sleep. So it ended. I went, holy shit, and then closed my computer and went to bed.
Yeah. But so regardless, all out. I really want to see him fight. It was like super respectful, but it was also like, you know, I want to see that match again. It's been 2 years since we saw that match in IBJJF, Kynan has done nothing but get better, and Gordon has done nothing but get better. So very, very curious, because that was a super close matchup 2 years ago. I think Kynan was beating Gordon for a good portion of that match, and then Gordon pulls it out at the end. So really, really want to see that matchup again. Go back and watch the fight very quick. Really one of the reasons why we're so hot on Kynan Duarte is just because he's just so good. Let's move on to the co-main event, Josh.
Yep. Kennedy Maciel defeating Gio Martinez by decision.
Dude, Gio is, like, he seems like he would be very, very, not frustrating to compete against, but he reminds me a lot of a Sun Sal at bantamweight in the UFC, where he's just, yeah, he's beatable, but man, you are never going to look good beating Gio Martinez. Or, like, in a match, he's just going to, he plays a game that makes it hard to work again. Because even the one time that Kennedy was able to really pass the guard on Gio, he settles position, he gets there, and Gio just slides, and does that really classic, brings his own foot into his chest, and then Gio breaks out of it. And then he's back on the guard, and you've got to pass Gio's really, really difficult guard again. And there was no point in time where you thought Kennedy was really going to start running away with the match. He was definitely on top, definitely pressuring more, and definitely had the initiative of the match. But at no point did it look like he was just going to run away with it. Like, Gio has this way of slowing people down and putting them into his game and keeping it active enough with just enough submission offense that you have to be really cautious with overcommitting into his guard. And Kennedy did a really great job. He would see Gio's entry into the legs or into the arm or wherever Gio intended to enter, and he would stop the motion, and he would work to completely shut down the position and then get out and then readdress the position. But as a result, you spend a lot of the match dealing with that. Then he has to put up his own offense in order to not lose the judge's decision at who's number one. And it was it's just a really strange dynamic to watch guys fight Gio. It's kind of the similar problem that Paulo Miau had very recently against Gio Martinez, but Kennedy was sort of able to do more on the top position of work and actually get past his guard. And I think that's what wins him the match in my eyes. Josh, what's your kind of take on the match?
I mean, you pretty much covered it. I think Kennedy is just physically bigger than Gio, even though they're fairly similar in weight. They even talked about it on the card. But it's just the nonstop pace that Kennedy put on. But this, watching this match, made me want to see a rematch between Kennedy and Ty Rotolo, even though they're now like two different weight classes. I would love to see them go at it again.
Yeah, like, that was ADCC quarterfinals, semifinals,
semis.
Yeah, that was a really, really good match. I haven't seen that match. Both gentlemen were on the card. It's match worth going back and watching, especially with how much growth we've seen. I also kind of want to see Kennedy go against Matheus Gabriel again. I think he's gotten bigger as well, but that was that Pans match that he got broken in last year. And Kennedy again looks better and better.
That was like 2 or 3 years ago that match happened.
No, that was that was 2019. Not last year. Yes, no. because we were curious to see if it would affect him at ADCC. I know.
I think it was 18.
All right, I could be wrong about this, but it's been a year. It's been 2020. It's just blurred everything together. We've also been doing the show for 3 years now, and I'm just getting confused. 78
months of 2020, so.
Basically. So, yeah, interesting match. Definitely on the slower side, but it was still really interesting to see the way that Kennedy addressed what Gio was throwing up. And a lot of guys will not be able to put up the level of offense when Gio throws this up. So it was really interesting to watch Kennedy be able to do that, because Gio is just a notoriously super hard guy to face. Like, you can't look good fighting Gio, because as soon as you start to open up, he also starts to open up. So this match was definitely on the slower side, but from a technical perspective, very interesting to watch the specific ways that Kennedy was able to staple Gio's legs and just kind of methodically address Geo's guard to get around it. There was no flash to get around the guard. It was a very interesting technical match between both guys. What match do you want to do next, Josh?
Up to you. I'll keep on rolling with it.
Let's talk about Roberto Jimenez versus Dante Leon. Leon actually was the bigger man in this match, which kind of made everyone laugh. I think he was like 186 or 7 in the match, and Jimenez was like 185.
Jimenez was in the ones was 174.
Am I that wrong?
And Leon was like 180.
Jesus. I don't know why I thought that was... I thought in the broadcast they said differently.
They made a big point about Jimenez being like way under the weight limit. And I don't know if that's like Jimenez just like working on not only like cardio, but trying to be in just a smaller weight class than 185.
Yeah, because Jimenez isn't like, neither guy looked like significantly outsized either way. This
Jimenez
match
looked real lean.
Yeah.
Like just real, like not in a bad way, just like lean and ready to rock and roll.
Yeah. This match, I'm super happy, played out exactly like I thought it was going to play out, but Jimenez didn't get heel hooked.
And Leon's not really like a heel hooker.
He's more of a knee bar guy. And after we did the show last week, I was thinking about that. I was like, yeah, he can definitely do him, but he's definitely more of a knee bar guy. And Jimenez historically has not been caught with the knee bars. He gets caught with the heel hooks. And so I wanted to kind of amend my pick after last week's show. I was like, I don't know. I still would have probably gone with Leon, but after seeing the way that he was able to address the leg locks, get out, and even pathway to the back for a couple points in this match, again, super impressed with Jimenez here. Like, Dante Leon, silver medalist at ADCC. Both these guys are now similar weight to 77. I know Dante would have to cut, you know, an extra 10 kilograms to make 77 from the weight he was at this match, but I'm impressed with Jimenez's defense here. He really doesn't let Dante Leon do that kind of fold over entry into the leg that we've seen him use on a lot of different guys. He addresses it well. We see Jimenez using a body lock to the back a couple of times here. His back control looked really good. He had Dante in some places where he really had to defend hard. And overall, I think wins a relatively comfortable decision here. You know, his ability to get on the back and stay there for a while, I think, cemented this in my mind, and kind of, again, another reason why we're really hot on Jimenez. Curious that he was so low in weight for this match. I'm kind of curious to see if he maybe intends to, I don't know how much lower he can get.
I mean, he's a young kid, so who knows? He can mess around with his body weight much easier than somebody that's older.
Right.
But one of the things was he put the pace on Leon, and when this match was over, and mind you, it's 15 minutes long, he didn't even look like he was competing. He was just like, yeah, whatever.
I remember,
and Leon looked exhausted.
I remember in the early Third Coast Grapplings when Jimenez was still a brown belt and we were covering him, I remember just the pace that he put. Might have been Third Coast Grappling 1, maybe Third Coast Grappling 2. The pace that he put on guys was breakneck. And that's the first thing that I kind of caught me about him was, yeah, we knew he was good, but in actually watching him compete, just the pace. And I think we saw a little less of that recently, but it's interesting to see him down in weight against a grappler that historically is a little lighter as well, and then him be able to throw that pace at Leon consistently for 15 minutes. Like, at no point in time did Jimenez look like he was going to slow down. And that was kind of, it was interesting to me in particular about this matchup. So any other kind of technical pieces you want to talk about for the match, Josh? Overall, really good match. We're super hot on both these guys. Again, most of the guys on the card were super hot on. That's why I'm a big fan of Who's Number One. These guys will face each other again, and I'm very curious to see what will change in the future. So it's a cool match because I know in 5 years we'll see these guys again. Any other pieces, Josh?
Nope.
All right, let's move on to Wagner Hosha taking on John Thor Blank.
I mean, Wagner doing his Wagner thing, John playing guard.
Yeah.
And, like, I was expecting John to, like, sort of change tactics as after that first like good heel hook grab, that was it. He didn't, there wasn't anything like of substance left, but not saying that, you know, Thor looked bad or anything like that. He was great at re-guarding, keeping in that half butterfly, half guard type thing. It's just Wagner just was on top and heavy and just being Wagner.
Yeah, it was really, we've seen a lot of Wagner's matches in the past year contend mostly on the feet. I think the match with Tankinho was 28, was right before ADCC. And that was the last match from Wagner before ADCC that I really think we saw a ton of his work on the ground. Most of his matches recently have been kind of standing collar tie, post on the forehead matches. So it was really interesting to see Wagner, again, up a full weight class at 185. You know, historically, Wagner was a 170-er. I think in UFC, he was a 55-er. Basically a full weight class. And the ability for Wagner to play on top here was super impressive to me. The way that he was able to get on top of John's hooks, begin to pass, negate the leg lock attempts from John. Because we've seen John hit, I mean, tons of guys with the heel hooks. That is his bread and butter from bottom position. He gets underneath you, he pushes you away, and he breaks your leg off. So it was really interesting to see Wagner be that willing to play on top and be able to keep John away and keep him from being able to get all the way underneath and out of the side to the leg. Like, we just haven't seen this from Wagner in, what do you think, Josh, about a year?
Something like that. But he even said it in his post-fight interview where, you know, he put on some of the Rona weight, but he started to enjoy having that extra weight to throw around. And him talking about going, fighting up in weight more, fighting in absolutes, doing things like, that's exciting. The thing is, like, I don't want it to be a boring, like, head-slapping match. I still want to see like 155/170 Wagner just mercilessly attacking, just bigger.
Yeah. Again, I'm curious to see if that'll kind of change the style of grappling that he's going to do, because in the contrast to the last year of Wagner Hosha that we've seen, this match was pretty different. You know, he was imposing a heavier game plan here, and that's not something we sort of saw him do a little bit at Combat Jiu-Jitsu, but he had the strikes there, and that was still, that would have been 2+ years ago at this point, was when he won Combat, actually, yeah, closer to 3 years, honestly, because that would have been at the old house for me. That was almost 3 years ago at this point. And so that was for the last foray that we saw that super active ground fast work of Wagner. I'm curious to see, it's been 3 years, he's 3 years older, he's what, 38 now? 40?
40. I think he's 40.
He's getting up there. Like, I'm curious to see if we're now going to see him kind of not rely as much on that fervorous pace that he's sort of broken guys with constantly attacking, and more so get a little bigger and begin to play a different game as he gets older, because he seems like a guy that still definitely wants to compete. Like, both his son and his daughter, Jasmine Rocha and Achilles Rocha, are both featured on cards very frequently with him. It seems like he's a guy that really enjoys competing and enjoys the process. And so maybe this is something we're going to see him change in the future, continue to stay at 185 and not necessarily, like, we're going to see him change his style of grappling. This was, again, a really interesting match because it's not something we've seen from Wagner Hosha in the last couple of years. So very, very impressed with Rocha here. John is a super dangerous guy from the bottom, and Rocha was just able to sort of, after that first attempt, just negate it and stop even the entries, which was the most impressive thing. Like, usually John can get under guys and get away and start an entry and guys have to defend, but Wagner was able to stave off the entries, and that's, for me, technically, what was most interesting here. I need to go back and watch and figure out exactly what he was doing, but Thor gets entries on guys, and Wagner stopped that, and that's sort of my takeaway for the match.
Yep.
Any other takeaways, Josh?
I mean, Wagner's got them heavy legs now, I guess. Just keeping everything back.
Yeah. Really impressive. So, next match, you want to do Bastos or want to do Rotolo?
Bastos.
So, Maisa Bastos taking on Grace Gundrum. This would have been, I think, Grace's second match at Black Belt. Bastos is, you know, the rooster weight, champion now. She is the Rooster Weight since Rikako Yuasa has sort of retired. Grace recently
gone
beat Patty Fontes. What?
Gone MIA?
Yeah, pretty much. We're not quite sure what's going on with Yuasa. So Grace recently beat Patty Fontes, who's number two and number three at the weight class, taking on Maisa Bastos. And damn, Bastos still got it versus the Youngblood.
With the thing is, like, she knew don't go in the guard. Like, don't get stuck there. So she would come up. She would sweep fairly easily, but then come up and feel uncomfortable and then immediately try to, like, lace over and come into a leg drag or force the leg drag position. And it's pretty interesting, like, how she would give up the position to try to come back up. And it wasn't until, 5 minutes left that they really, really turned it up.
Yeah, there was a big switchover with about a third left in the match.
So, I mean, there's lots of small technical details. The first 10 minutes is probably on the slower side of things. But just seeing the little bits and pieces of what's going on, like, you'll see that Grace can compete with the upper echelon of the lighter weight females. It's just a consistency thing, and is she going to be able to, like, get it done in the 10 minutes? Is she, you know, going to try to wrestle more? Is she going to play the point game at all? Like, will she do no-gi worlds? Things like that.
Yeah. Overall, a really interesting match. A little bit of a setback for Grace. She's been on a pretty, you know, skyrocketed upward trajectory for a little bit. I think this is her first big loss that we've ever covered her on the show. There's a Flow article that says it's the first time she's lost since she was like 12 or 13. And Josh and I'm not certain that's correct. But I off the top of my head cannot think of anything. Regardless, really interesting matchup. Both ladies are very young. I think Grace is more of a 105er. I think she walks at like 112.
I think both of them are that light because, I mean, off the top of my head, I think Rooster Weight at IBJJF is like 109 in the gi.
Yeah, I forget what it is for women. I think we said it was what, 112 for men or 120 for men? 122
it's
for men?
121 or 122 for men.
Yeah, I always mess up the no-gi versus the gi for the men. But yeah, the women's is, I think, 10 or 11 pounds lighter than that. Yeah, regardless, interesting match, definitely slower. The last 5 minutes of the match really pick up, and I think that's where Bastos really starts to kind of take away with it, when the pace increased. But overall, good match, very interesting to see kind of. This is the matchup that I wanted to see, so I think Bastos takes a pretty clean decision here, but I would love to see this in another year. I think it's a matchup that'll look really good in another year. I foresee that we're probably going to see it, you know, very frequently, especially given Grace's submission win over Fontes, who's right at the top of the heap. So I think we'll see Bastos and Grace go back and forth overall. I think Bastos really cements her number one spot here in the Roosterweight division, though, with this win. Moving on to the last match we're going to cover on the main card, Tyra Tolo defeating Cody Steele via inside heel hook. I know this is one that you really wanted to talk about, Josh.
Dude, the kid is 17 years old. Like, one of the things was a few hours ago. It's 5:50 right now, p.m. on Monday, and probably about 2:30 p.m. I was watching the match again, and one of the questions was, I wonder what Tyra Tolo's ape index is, because his fingertips seem to touch below his kneecaps.
If you don't know what an ape index is basically the measurement of how long your arms are versus your body height. So typically your height is equivalent to your wingspan. So every additional inch after that your wingspan is larger than your height is it height or is it another metric? I think it's height, isn't it, Josh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is basically contributes to your ape index. And Josh and I both think that Rotolo must have a crazy ape index because his
arms are freakish. His limbs are freakishly long.
Which makes sense that his Darce game is so crazy good. because that's the Darce game is typically a game for, you know, longer limbed guys, but we're starting to see him foray into the heel hooks, Josh.
He's foraying into a whole lot of thing. It was hilarious that, like, he almost took himself down trying to do, like, those foot sweeps from the head tie.
He got it, though. Well, I mean, that one that he takes steel down with is amazing.
Well, that was, like, more of a knee tap type thing, but still, like, the kid is sick. And then if you watch his passing, like, the brothers have the video on the stomp passing where they'll step on your legs and
Josh,
go through.
Josh, it's leg pin passing, I'd have you know.
Whatever.
Stomp passing. Yeah.
But also the way he pivots on his own knee to change angles to pass the guard is ridiculous. Like, the kid just flows. It's wild. And again, 17. So there's no ceiling yet.
Yeah, no, like, he's literally not even in, like, the pre-athletic prime. Like, literally still a child. Like, and that, I mean, that with absolutely no disrespect at all. Like, still a kid. And what do you think he's ranked now? Number two? Number three at 170?
Who's one at 170?
Who's the champ at 170?
I don't know, but...
Top five? Easily top five. I forget what they ranked him after this win, but I think Steele was number nine, and he subbed Steele with the inside heel hook.
And, like, in the dying minutes of the match, too, at that.
Yeah.
Like, both Rotolo brothers are going to be scary. It'll be interesting to see if Cade, like, joins his brother in the same size, as Ty is apparently the bigger one that has started to hit puberty more.
I feel like Ty is going to be a weight class above. I just feel like his brother, like, Ty just got bigger not right after ADCC, because he had put on all the weight because he cut all the weight, but right, like, when he started competing again after ADCC, you saw the brothers next to each other, and you saw that, like, Ty was visibly the larger man there. So I'm curious to see if we'll see Cade, like, move to, like, 160, and we'll see, you know, Ty, 170, and Ty continue to move up to, like, almost 185 as he gets older. That would not surprise me at all, just given the kind of the stature of the two brothers. But, dude, Rotolo looked so good here. You know, the only one to get a submission on the main card versus, again, Steele, who is notoriously kind of difficult to sub. Also top-ranked in the division. There is no ceiling for Rotolo. We saw him historically struggle with the leg locks earlier in his career, and by that we mean, like, when he was 15 at Trials in 2019, in ADCC Trials. I think when Nicky Ryan got him with the heel hook, was it? I always forget who fought who. Was it Nicky Ryan? I always forget which brother fought Nicky Ryan.
I think it was Ty.
Okay.
I think
it was Cade. I don't know why I think it was Cade, but that guy with a heel hook. Since then, worked on that defense, improved that defense, and now we're seeing them go for, especially in the Grapple Fest match that we saw both brothers on, we're seeing them throw the leg locks more and more and sort of begin to incorporate that as a tool that they have. And that was on display here. Gets it done. Inside heel hook. Any sort of technical pieces that you want to add to the match, Josh?
No, I mean, just go back and watch his passing and watch what he does with his legs and, like, the, like, misdirection he causes with not only, like, the way he looks, but the way he moves.
Yeah, a lot with his hips. You see him kind of, like, start to set Steele's hips like he's going to make one motion and then do a really interesting misdirection to get around it.
His passing reminds me a whole lot of Teddy's passing, where it's just like this smooth dance that he does.
Yep. He also has that really, like, high, like, bent over posture, and he can reach all the way down from almost like a road position on your legs while leg pinning you, which is just, I got to imagine that's a nightmare to deal with, because his arms can reach you, like, at the same length that your legs are. So realistically, usually when you have a length advantage on your legs, I'm guessing a lot of that gets negated because Ty's arms are just so long. I'm really curious to see how they both kind of leverage that in conjunction with the leg pin passing in general. But yeah, overall, we're just seeing more amazing stuff from Rotolo here. I do not know who we match him up against with next. I want to see the Kennedy matchup, like you said.
Everybody.
But
just throw everybody at him. I just want to see it. I don't care.
I kind of want to see him against Jimenez, not going to lie.
I want to see him against Buchecha. I want to see him against whoever. I don't care.
Yeah.
I just want to see him against Mikey. Everybody. Gi, no gi, you know, freestyle wrestling, checkers, pickup sticks. I don't care. So, I want to see it.
Super hot on Tyler Tolo. Again, as usual, I think who's number one? Great event. Love it. A lot of matches went to decision, but that is sort of what happens when you have the best in the world competing for ranked spots. Overall, really good event. Matches that I was super happy for. Definitely watch it if you have not watched it because, you know, these are the best grapplers in the world. Anything else on who's number one, Josh?
Nope.
All right. So moving into our recap of Fight to Win 159. Let's talk about a couple of the matches on the main card here. We kind of went a little long with who's number one. So you want to start with the main card, Josh?
You mean the black belts?
I want to start with the black belt top of the card match, Josh.
Devontae Johnson defeated Guillerme Augusto via decision.
This match
not a very exciting affair.
This match looked a lot like Devontae's match with Patrick Gaudio at BJJ Bet. Again, that's one of his more recent matches. But again, a lot of like stand-up work, a lot of looking for the grips in standing up. And then there was a couple, like I think one really good pass attempt from him. And then maybe one or two really good pass attempts when Guillermo was on top.
Guillerme.
What'd I say?
Guillermo.
Oh, Guillerme was on top. And overall, that was a lot of like the action in the match. Josh, do you have anything else you want to add to the match?
Yeah, I don't know why the fuck the ref kept starting the match back on the feet. Like, they'd be in guard, and they'd be like, all right, back to the middle, and on your feet. I'm like, what the hell is going on? So, but that was it.
So that was the match. Next match, we have Johnny Tama defeating Jackson the Guy via decision. The white and white geese here kind of threw me off when I was trying to cover the match because this is such, like, Nagai and Tama are both so grip heavy and so, like, intricate players at the weight. I almost need to see, like, different color geese here because the white and white
just know the person on the bottom is more than likely Tama.
Yeah. Tama has a crazy guard. We've seen the guy play from the bottom a lot, too.
We've seen them both play from the guard. The thing is, though, like, Tama was like, I'm staying underneath. Yeah. And that was, like, the name of the game. Nagai tried to throw a few, like, flying things. And the commentators, one of which was Tubby Aliquin, kept saying, like, those were attempts. I was like, that's not an attempt if you... I mean, it's an attempt, but it's not, like, a catch, if you will.
Similar to what we saw with Gio versus Kennedy, where it's like Gio would begin to enter into something that could turn into an attempt, but it's like the initial, like, that's that initial space before you get into what I would consider an attempt.
Yeah, it just not where I would think it would score anything anyway. The decision, I felt it should have went to Tama, so I mean, there's not much more to add to that.
Yeah. A very intricate grip game from both guys for pretty much the majority of the match. Next match, we have Jessica Flower defeating Talita Nogueira via decision.
Same thing. You have two world champions going against each other. Talita playing guard and Flowers, you know, trying to get by and attacking the turtle. And
a lot of attacking the turtle in this match, but really never able to get the hooks all the way in and really, like, never able to really open up the turtle and start to demonstrably, like, attack the back was kind of what I was a little surprised with here.
I mean, Talita's no slouch, but it's just, it was just like, you know, you've got one in 1A, essentially, where it's like, you've got people that are amazing, and sometimes it's hard to finish when they're of just about equal skill.
Yeah. Very, 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 very close match overall. Flowers definitely on the offensive more. So in the fight to win rule set, I think she takes a pretty clean decision here, just given how she was attacking the turtle. I think it's a couple, two or three different pretty good turtle attacks to get towards the back, but never really able to settle a lot. Just more active. That's sort of what we've seen from Flowers when she takes decisions on fight to win. She just usually wins it with, you know, with activity. Positional and just dominance. her ability to kind of positionally dominate her opponents, and then that's what we see here. So that was the match. Josh, want to read the want to keep going down the names, because I'm gonna start butchering them horribly, and we learned that again last week.
You looked at the name underneath Jessica's, didn't you? And you were like, nope.
I know his name. I know Matt Frivola.
Okay. Oh well, look at you, fancy. He look defeated Tony Wade via decision. Eric Nadon defeated Colin Taylor via decision. Chase Rome defeated Julius Mobley via decision. Pablo Lavaselli defeated Christopher Torres via submission, bow and arrow choke. Chris is actually one of our training partners. He's originally from Florida and moved up here right before the Rona. And then, yeah, I think he's also down there for Masters Worlds,
which is also happening this next week. So I've actually never met him, by the way, because I have not trained since.
Stayed away from the gym, and you have a broken spine.
That's
understandable.
So I will meet him one day when we have the Rona vaccine and I can train again at the gym.
Good guy, very like old school type game, but knows the new stuff too. So it's a very fun training partner. Leonidas Villagran defeated Benjamin Zapata via decision. Jason Valle defeated Rory Every via decision. Mark Peace defeated Edwin Mossmiller via toehold. Josh Soder defeated Kevin Gallagher via decision. And Eric Aliquin defeated Enrique Marche via decision.
On to the brown belt matches.
Joey Lugo defeated Pat Cherf via armbar. Gerardo Carrero defeated Michael Casera via submission. Thiago Alves defeated Ian Robinson via split decision. Chris Crawford defeated Kevin Granados via decision.
We cover Crawford a ton. He's a dude that will go everywhere to compete. I covered him most recently at the Egg Guard, too, that I did commentary on a couple of months ago. He came up from Florida, and I was like, I thought you were an East Coast guy. He goes, nah, man, Florida. And I was like, you are everywhere. He goes, I like to compete. So it's cool to see him actually getting on Florida cards in his home state.
Kevin Kowski defeated Brian Vaca Sanchez via decision. Philip Rowe defeated Stanley Rosnelos via decision. I'm getting all Nick Merckx here and getting super close on here. Thiago Alves defeated Garrett Smith via straight ankle lock. Michael Rodriguez defeated Jay Enoch via decision. And George Fernandez defeated Matt Drinnen via knee bar.
On to the purple belt results.
Ramiro Leon defeated Felipe Porto via decision.
And Leon retains the fight to win 205-pound championship belt for the purple belts.
You like how I led to that to see if you could actually read it?
Josh, you know what it is. You know that I read what belt they are, and then I read if there's a submission of the night, and I read if they retain the title. Other than that, we don't let me read names for a reason, and that's why you're here. And, you know, technical analysis that I don't have.
Sure. Anthony Valdez defeated Jordan Sainz via decision. Diego Dominguez defeated Franklin Laraquente? Sure, by heel hook. Jordan Peterson defeated Carlos Brown via knee bar. Ismael Sanchez defeated Alex Kopp via injury. Rita Rojas defeated Natalie Robertson via decision. Megan Cawley defeated Shauna Ormsby via decision. Adam Stuck defeated Tanner Tuck via inside heel hook. Bruno Arujo defeated Damon. That is not his real name. Damon Dirt McGirt via cross choke. Shout out to ODB, old dirty bastard. Rest in peace. Francisco Popsidero defeated Joshua Marsh via decision. That's probably Joshua.
It actually probably is spelled that way, by the way. I've seen that before. That probably actually is the spelling of his name. Joshua, not Joshua.
Sure, yeah. Mindy Henry defeated Brittany Way via heel hook. Kevin Ryan defeated Keith Pastrana via decision. And Emilio Pereira defeated Sean Arclay via heel hook.
On to the blue belt results.
Whew.
Josh, been a while, hasn't it? You're rusty with Grappling Rewind names.
It's been a whole week. Alana Gonzalez defeated Destiny Brandt via Kimura. Taylor Clark defeated Jolene Sunga via decision. Feliciano Hernandez defeated Andre Robergallet. Oh, Glock. There we go. Thanks. Andre Glock via decision. Too many names. Daniel Lyons defeated Rafael Delgado via decision. Joao Alves defeated Michael Vildestreit. Oh, man. That is a hard one. Yeah.
You're struggling with the move-outs, Josh.
Julio Diaz defeated Sebastian Dalset. What? This guy has 17 names. Via decision. Angelo Trevino defeated Luis Rodriguez via decision. Nico Welcher defeated Dallas Evans via footlock. Steve Marzaregos defeated James Badley via decision. Melina Sessa defeated Emily Harris via decision.
On to the kids matches and kids and teens matches.
Jesus. Alana Delva defeated Lily Crack via decision. Jocelyn Molina defeated Elizabella Lopez via submission. And Sarah Brett defeated Samantha Pothier via submission.
So that does it for results of Fight to Win 159. Thank you, Josh, holy for not shit. Making me do that because I'm terrible at names. Moving on to our preview of Third Coast Grappling 5, taking place December 19th, starting at 7 p.m. This one is headlined by William Tackett taking on Felipe Andrew. Josh, how do you see it going down?
Ooh, you're putting me on the spot here. AKA, you're making me guess.
That's honestly, I think that's a great way to put this. Like, this is sort of a guess. Like, I could see this going either way. I do want to lean Felipe Andrew. He's been a black belt long. I mean, Tackett's not a black belt yet. He's been a black belt longer. He has a little more depth of experience. We've seen him just punch up. We've seen him sub like the upper echelon of guys this year. The Keenan sub at Euros, the Hulk sub at one of the earlier Third Coast Grappling Kumites, the Footlock sub over Jimenez at Pans, and I think also at Third Coast Grappling. Like, Andrew is a dangerous, dangerous grappler. And again, so is Tackett. Like, I'm not going to take anything away from Tackett. It would not surprise me at all to see a Tackett victory here. I just think Andrew has a little more... He has a little more experience.
Against higher-level people.
Yeah.
Not saying that, again, Tackett hasn't gone against high-level people. Yeah. I just think Andrew has...
a little bit more?
Larger... pool of experience with high level black belts.
Yeah, and something I think that we'll see, you know, we'll see Tackett in a year here probably have very comparable experience to, you know, any competitive black belt, but he's again still a brown belt. But we've seen him beat so many guys. Like, he's won so many. He's won like Jiu-Jitsu King, he's won Third Coast, he's won all of these tournaments, but again, so is Andrew. So stylistically,
you know what it is that we're not factoring in that a lot of those wins for Andrew have been in the gi, and this is a no gi match, which Tackett, while is a great gi competitor,
we've only covered him a couple of times.
Fantastic no gi competitor.
Yeah, he really is a fantastic no gi guy. But again, some of the Andrew wins, most of the big wins have been gi.
In the gi.
Was the Barbosa triangle in no gi? For some reason, I think that was Nogi because I think I could see Barbosa's wrist when he popped it through. I think that was one of the earlier Third Coast, like Third Coast Kumite 4 or 3.
It might have been.
I'm not sure. I want to lean Andrew here.
I'm gonna go Felipe Andrew, but I would not be surprised if Tackett takes it.
Yeah, I want to go Andrew here, but super unconfidently. Again, for instance, we look at Tackett versus Tex Johnson at BJJ Fanatics last year. And then you look at him versus Tech Johnson in, I think, Subversive 3 or 4 this year. Like, world of difference. Like, he looked good against Tech the first time, lost in overtime. And then I think he submitted Tech in their
He's
rematch.
Also bigger now, too.
He's much bigger. So, like, the size discrepancy is not there. Again, I'm going to pick Andrew here, but super unconfidently. Tackett's a guy. Actually, both. The other thing about this match is both guys can play spoiler. These are two guys that we have picked against in the past that have like, oh, cool, I thought he was going to get got the first round, and he's in the finals now. So I love this matchup because it's super hard for me to pick. I can see both guys definitely playing a lot of footlocks here. Andrew is super dangerous and finishes extremely quick. I think
He's
got a great squeeze for the footlocks. I think Tackett is definitely, I'm not going to say more measured, but he wants to get a little more in place before he starts cranking on the footlock, and I'm kind of concerned how that's going to go with Felipe Andrew, who was notoriously able to finish footlocks in what would sort of be termed as out of position, but in a way that he can finish them. He has a special ability to finish unorthodox footlocks that we quite haven't seen from Tackett. Tackett likes to lock a position down, but we've seen him crawl up the positional chain a ton. I foresee this being a leg locky battle that both guys are perfectly willing to initiate. But it wouldn't surprise me to see, you know, this be a guard battle either. Both, you know, all both guys can play either way. I just see them both seeing their area of strength as being the leg lock game. How do you, what do you think, Josh? Think the same thing?
Yeah, pretty much. Again, like, would not be surprised if Tackett takes it, but I'm leaning Felipe Andrew.
Yeah, really great matchup. You know, a great headline matchup because it's so there's so much, like, I don't know who's going to take it. That's always what I love to see. Next matchup, we have Thiago Macedo replacing Mikey Musumeci versus Johnny Tama. We just saw Johnny Tama this last week, and we've covered him a ton recently in quarantine. He's been really, really active. Josh, how do you see this one going? I kind of want to lean Tama just because I feel like it's in the gi. Tama is, again, no gi world champion, but has been really, really strong in the gi. And I think that he'll probably slow Thiago down from the bottom, get on top, and potentially then start throwing, you know, like the submission offense that we've seen him throw on Fight to Win recently.
Have we seen Thiago at all this year?
We might have seen him at Pans, at Gi Pans. I think we saw him. I do not know if he medaled
it's
or not.
It's hard keeping track
at that event. But again, I also don't have a ton of tape. I have a ton of tape on Tama recently, and I'm like very familiar with his game. Especially when we covered him versus Nagai this week on the show, so it makes me easy. I'm also a super biased picker. That if I've seen you compete in the last 2 months. but that's openly, I try to talk about it on the show, like, where my biases lie. Like, if I've seen a guy compete in the last few months, I am much more likely to pick him versus a guy I haven't seen in 3 or 4 months. I don't remember the last time we've covered Macedo. It might have been at a Fight to Win, but it might have also been at a major, because there's been a lot of majors in Texas and Florida this last year. So off the top of my head, I'm kind of struggling here, but kind of want to go Tama.
I think Tama's going to pull guard, and I think he's going to start working from there, doing a lot of collar and sleeve, a lot of, like, Barambolo style work, a little bit of lapel stuff. I'm going to lean Tama, and I think he's going to... I think he'll take it by decision. He tries to finish, but I think Macedo is good enough to defend most of that, but I think Tama will take a decision.
Yeah. Tama by sub. Collar choke from the back, going big.
Ooh.
Next matchup I'm super excited for. John Combs versus Paige Mourinho in no-gi.
You mean head squeezer versus head squeezer?
You mean guillotine versus guillotine battle, baby? Give me that shit. I'm so excited for this matchup. Like, both guys, like, I think Combs talked about on a podcast recently that he was like, he has like 63% of his wins are by guillotine. And it's just like some insane percentage of, like, most of the time when he wins via guillotine. And Pedro Mourinho also, like, I think the most famous Pedro Mourinho picture that we have is him at Nogi Pans. No, sorry, was it Nogi Pans or was it Nogi Worlds? At brown belt versus Jimenez, like the day before Jimenez got his black belt, when he beat Jimenez and he finishes the match trying to murder him in that guillotine, and Jimenez keeps driving forward on the double leg, and the match ends, and I think Pedro took it via points. Like, very, very talented guillotine guy. Also great leg locker. Combs also a good leg locker too. So
I'm gonna go Mourinho via knee bar.
Really? Yes. I would pick him via heel hook if I was going to pick him via leg lock.
Knee bar. Really? I think Combs is, like, savvy enough and been attacked by enough people. heel hook wise where he'll be able to stop it. I think Mourinho is going to transition over top and try to finish with a knee bar.
Hmm. Let me come back to this one because I'm like, I'm super on the fence. Again, it's a guilty matchup. Like, I've been looking at this for weeks and weeks and thinking about all the different like ways it could play out. Both guys are going to go for the front head. I think Combs is overall a better wrestler, but I think Mourinho is bigger. And so I'm curious to see how Mourinho will leverage his size against Combs. We've seen Combs fight up in weight a ton. Like, he's a guy that I always think is much, much bigger than he is, even though, like, I think he can get down to 55. I think he's done 65, but I think he's... I don't think Mourinho's getting down to 55 unless you take a leg off. So I'm curious to see if Mourinho's going to be able to leverage that size advantage, although Combs is going to have more experience. You know, I kind of want to lean Pedro here via guillotine. He's got a crazy squeeze, and I think he's going to be bigger than Combs here. And I think although Combs will get good work in early, I think Pedro's going to have to fight out of a deep guillotine early that'll look like really close to being finished, and then he's going to come on top and threaten Combs and then just like know he has to get Combs out because he can't get caught again. And so I want to lean Mourinho, but very barely. I could see Combs catching him in a guillotine early because Combs is super dangerous with the front headlocks early. Like the first time he gets you, a lot of times he's snatching guys up. Next matchup, we have Cody Steele versus Edwin Najmi. This one got announced, I think, today or yesterday when recording this show. Steele was originally going to fight Vitor Silveiro, but that got replaced with Edwin Najmi. And honestly, like, I'm pretty amped about that matchup. I think that's a, for me, that's,
I mean,
a much...
Silveiro and Najmi are teammates now, so...
Oh, yeah, they are, aren't they?
That's a great replacement.
Yeah, it is a great replacement. How do you see it going? I mean, it's a no-gi match, so we're going to see Najmi get slammed, if it's legal or not. If it's a no-gi match, not. If it's a match, Najmi's going to get slammed. Do you think he's going to throw the flying triangle on Steele, and how do you think Steele will address that?
Najmi doesn't give a shit. He'll throw it. He'll throw whatever. He doesn't care. But, like, how is Steele going to recover from the loss from this past weekend
against Rotolo
versus Rotolo, and how savvy is Najmi with lots and lots of leg entanglements?
Yeah, we saw Najmi get got with a heel hook versus Gary Tonin very quickly at ADCC 2019. I think that's the last time I recall Najmi getting finished via leg lock. Josh, do you recall a time since that matchup a little more than a year ago at this point?
Not that I can think of. And I mean, Najmi has an amazing straight ankle lock that everybody knows about and has known about since blue belt.
Blue or purple belt for him.
So, you know, he's messed up many a foot. I'm leaning Cody Steele just because he's been more active. And I'm going to say he takes it by heel hook.
Really? You think he's going to grab Najmi here?
Yep.
I feel like he's going to come in and not respect the game of Najmi, but I feel like Najmi will try to fight early from the feet, look to set up the collar tie and flying triangle. Steele will be very hip to it because it's Edwin Najmi. In Nogi, Najmi has a little more difficulty throwing that because he doesn't have the grip on the collar there, so he has to get kind of closer to you to throw it, but he's going to stand upright. I think Steele is going to counter off of the triangle, get to the mat, and then he's going to work for the back, and then from the back go to the legs, and then I kind of want to lean him via leg lock as well. I feel like he's not going to be worried about Edwin's game on the legs, and he's just going to try to power through it. And that's sort of how I see it going. Again, Najmi, it wouldn't surprise me to have Najmi like be able to pass off of that and go to like a mounted triangle then to his back, which you've seen him finish before. I think we saw him finish that at one of the earlier Third Coast Grapplings, I think Third Coast Grappling 4, we saw him do the same thing from his back, go triangle, and then, or sorry, from mount, go triangle, and then switch to his back to finish that. That wouldn't surprise me here either, but I think someone's getting subbed here because both guys are just willing to aggressively throw, and both guys are good enough to counter off of what the other person puts up. Next match, we have Andrew Tackett versus Damian Anderson. This is Nogi, and this is no time limit, sub only.
Tackett.
How do you think he gets it?
Heel hook.
Really? I think we're going to get a choke. I think he's going to get to the back. I think we're going to see him path to the back. I think it'll take a while. I think he's going to really slowly work. He's going to measure out his pace here, and he's going to pass. He's going to get to the back with Damian Anderson, and then he's going to be real patient. Or I think he just...
Tackett, heel hook, under 5 minutes.
Tackett, we're going to get a choke, 6 minutes. Maybe. Okay. Just a guess. Next match, we have Jordan Holy versus Ruben Rivera in Nogi.
Holy, heel hook, 2 minutes.
I think, yeah, I'm going to lean Holy here. He's just got a really nasty, he's got a really nasty heel hook game, and you know what he wants. And
he looked great at, CJJ.
Yeah.
You know, and he was beating everybody pretty quickly. Yeah. I think it's a safe bet to say Holy will win by heel hook. I don't think it will take him that long. Not, you know.
He's a notoriously really quick, like, starter and finisher. Like, he does not waste a whole lot of time. He's going to hit you pretty hard, pretty fast at the beginning. He's going to get to where he wants, and then he's just aggressively just going to hunt you on the ground because he's not really looking to play a positional game at all. Like, he can definitely pass. We saw him versus Marvin Castell, like, pass and, like, do, you know, positionally aggressive work at one of the earlier Third Coast grapplings. But I just feel like for this one, he's not going to be incentivized to play for the position. He's just going to be looking for the sub. Oh, Third Coast grappling is points.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
That's why they made it specifically the Tackett, Andrew Tackett matches, no time limit, sub only.
Right, and so in my head, I'm
Holy's down. Holy's game leads him to getting into better positions, so I don't, again, I don't think Ruben Rivera is bad. I just think
the style of game is like you have to defend someone who only wants to enter a specific way and enter really, really aggressively and really, really quickly. And unless you can just get away from that, and Holy has a specific game that makes it hard to get away from that, you know, he sort of invites guys to play his game because he tends to make a lot of space because he wants you to come in. And then when you start to come in on him, he gets underneath you and starts to wrap you up really quickly. And so it's a really, it's a really nice deceptive game, and that's why I like watching Holy, because it seems like, oh yeah, he's going to get past here, and then he just kind of, like, he redirects the space and gets underneath you and gets really deep on the legs, and then when he finishes, he rips legs.
Yeah.
So that's, I kind of lean Holy by heel hook, probably 3 minutes, 4 minutes maybe. Again, Rivera, I could definitely see shutting down and playing a positional game on Holy, but Holy only needs one really good opportunity. He reminds me a lot of, like, Thor's game, where it's, if you let Thor get underneath you, you really have an uphill battle there. That's kind of why the match with Wagner was so impressive, because Wagner on top with Thor underneath, and he wasn't able to get the entries going. So I think a similar dynamic here. I want to lean Holy and lean Holy quick with heel hooks, but I can see Rivera playing, like, a nice top pressure-heavy game for the match. Joshua? Yep. What do you think about the next one? Do you want to keep going, or do you want to just read them through?
Let's just read the rest of them through. Ricardo Evangelista versus Guillerme Augusto in the Gi. Christian Guzman versus Andrew Alexander Nogi. Bruno Matias versus Adam Bradley in Nogi.
That'll be fun. Big fan of Bradley. Recent black belt Atos. Again, so ever since you hit the reverse scorpion deathlock, that step over Kimura from, like, the Keisagatame, I love watching him, Bradley. He just is a super aggressive finisher.
And then we have Robert Azell versus Justin Rennick, also no gi.
Yeah, we've covered Justin
a
ton.
I think from top to bottom, this will be a really exciting card.
Yeah, it looks really good. Third Coast, I mean, the numbered Third Coast grapplings are always bangers. I'm excited. There's also a lot of, like, younger talent on here, which I like. It's a lot of guys that are, they can really make a name for themselves off of, like, big wins. And I think it's a lot of guys that really fight to make that name off themselves. A lot of Texas grapplers as well. And I like that Third Coast really showcases a lot of the Texas talent down there, because there is a ton of it. So look for that on December 19th. Should be a really, really fun card. Taking place on December 20th is Submission Underground. Submission Underground 19. We are back to a lot of MMA fighters on Submission Underground, but some actually really interesting matchups here. I'm not certain Josh, who is still on this card and what has been changed. We have a title match between Satoshi Ishii and Mason Fowler. I foresee what Fowler...
stupid matchup.
I foresee what Fowler taking this.
Stupid matchup.
Taking this quickly. We have Felice Spencer versus Amanda Lowen. Amanda Felicia. Lowen, I'm probably going to pick here versus Spencer. We've seen her, I think, defend the title a couple of times versus stiff grappling competition at SUG. We also have Rafael Dos Anjos versus Donald Cerrone. What do you think about this one, Josh?
While Cerrone is really good on the ground for a striker, Dos Anjos is like a legitimate black belt underneath Gordo, has a great half guard game, has great bottom and top positioning. I see Dos Anjos just taking it. Maybe not submitting him, but definitely taking it.
I wonder if this is going to be the 5 minutes and then overtime. With SUG, I don't really want to talk about overtime because it's not as interesting to me. Yeah. But I'm curious. I see a lot of these matches going to overtime. And I'm very curious to see where RDA and Cowboy will decide to really start the overtimes here. But I see RDA being really aggressive on top, but I see Cowboy maybe being able to retain the guard or retain the half, because I think RDA will probably settle for a top half. But when they go to overtime, do you think they choose the arm or they choose the neck, Josh? I think for the
They'll
MMA
both
guys,
take the back.
They're going to choose the neck.
Take the back.
And then both guys are going to defend, I think, for probably the majority of time, and maybe somebody might escape. And that really is kind of a coin toss for me for who escapes first in one of the three overtimes for SUG here. So, also on the card, we have Anthony Johnson versus Fabricio Werdum. I'm guessing Verdum's going to probably take this in a couple of minutes.
Verdum's going to pick him up and drop him on his head, and then or pull guard and triangle him.
Yeah, the pull guard triangle would not surprise me at all if you've watched Werdum fight ever. He does that a lot.
How fat is Rumble going to be is the real question.
I think Rumble just got signed to PFL or to, was it PFL?
I thought he went to Bellator.
Is it Bellator? Yeah, it's Bellator because there was a great meme with Corey Anderson posted like immediately after Rumble got signed that was, like it was something coming around a corner and it was Bellator title. And then it had Anthony Johnson come out in front of it and he goes, man, I can't have shit. And it was just a super great like, self-aware post that he's gonna have to fight Rumble Johnson and that sucks. Yeah, it's Bellator. Yeah, I see Werdum. Yeah, Werdum via triangle wouldn't surprise me here. Given that Werdum has a propensity for triangling folks. Next we have Brett Primus versus Craig Jones.
Craig Jones, 25 seconds heel hook done. We don't have to talk about it anymore.
22 seconds. And then we have Kevin Casey versus Gabriel Checo. I'm guessing. I kind of want to lean. I don't really know. This is going to be a weird one. I could see this being a match where one guy pushes the other guy into the fence and onto the ground, and it's a half-guard battle on the ground that goes to overtime. And I can see Casey maybe being a little slower versus Checo in the overtime, but neither would really surprise me a ton. Josh, what do you think?
I have no opinion on this match because I honestly don't care for it.
All right.
I'm not a huge fan of Kevin Casey in general. And I'm not really a huge fan of Checo either. So, you know.
All right.
That one,
All right. So that's
expert analysis right there.
Super helpful, Josh, as always. So that does it. I don't think that's all that's happening this following week. We're still going to find the match with TMA. Not TMA. What was the organization, Josh?
Something that Krellenston will continually win if TMS. They keep inviting.
Yep, TMS. I'm going to find some results for that and find some match footage for that and go through that this week. Other than that, what do you have going on, Josh? We're going to start getting stuff together for top 10s the following week, not this week, but the next week. Always a massive undertaking that we wait till, you know, the middle of December to do every year.
The last minute. We all wait until like 10 minutes before we record and we're like, oh, these matches.
Yeah. Now we've been better. That was the first year. We've been better the last couple of years, but then 2020 was the dumpster fire that it was. So I don't have a nice cohesive list like I've had in the last couple of years. So it'll be.
Are there matches? What?
Yeah, it was in the first 6 months was a little interesting. So look for that in a couple of weeks. It's always it is always one of my most fun shows of the year because we just talk about wild moments that happened in 2020. And if 2020 has been anything, it is wild. Josh, what you got going on this coming week?
Probably going to watch Charles Oliveira beat the brakes off of Tony Ferguson again.
Oh, my God.
And then work.
Dude, that whole card was crazy. If you didn't watch UFC 256 or so, whatever that was.
294.
Dude, watch Brandon Moreno and Davidson Figueiredo. That shit great. Was fire. That was like, dude, both those guys are now in the top five for most punches thrown, significant strikes thrown in about.
And they beat the shit out of each other.
They did. It was amazing. And it was like, oh, that was a really, really good fight. And I was texting my buddies, and he was like, this could be a draw. And I was watching with Rachel. I was like, oh, my God, this could be a draw. She goes, okay. And she was just watching the fight and just not nearly as, like,
just like whatever. Who
engrossed
cares?
As I was.
Just enjoying honestly, guys punch each other.
Watching Charles Oliveira take on Tony Ferguson here and kind of grapple him the way he did with that disgusting broken armbar at the end of the second round.
Yeah, he just beat the shit out of Ferguson at, like, everything.
Now I want to see
grappling, wrestling. He out-wrestled him.
Yeah. Now I want to see Bronx in Copapodia again. Because DuBronx historically competes in Copapodia once or twice a year. I kind of want to see him, like, back in grappling because I'm curious to see, like, I think he has the most submission wins in the UFC history.
I think that's correct.
Something crazy. And yeah, you watch Tony Ferguson just not tap to a extended, hyper extended, super nasty armbar.
It was definitely dislocated, and like he let go, and like the arm straightened out and went back into place. But he didn't use it for the majority of round two.
Yeah, it was pretty nasty. So overall, great card. Go watch that. Mackenzie Dern also fought on the card, took a close decision victory. What else? Jacare Souza got
Jesus Christ
punched in the face by Kevin Holland, and every single strike that Kevin Holland threw looked like it rocked Jacare. I have a great post on Reddit where I agree with someone's post about that. I was like, yeah, that thing you said, I agree with.
Well, he hit him. And, like, Jacare leans back, and you're like, oh, he's half dead already.
Yeah. And then he covered up. You're like, oh, and then Kevin Holland realizes, like, oh, yeah, and just beats the shit out of him. 1 minute, 45 seconds. I was like, Kevin Holland's here to stay.
He exercised Jacare.
Dude, five,
his soul is gone.
5 wins in 7 months in the UFC.
Whatever. He just beat the brakes off of him, dude, too. That was awesome.
Yeah, RIP Jacare, but... great event. Great week of fights. Great week of fights coming up.
See you
up
in Bellator soon, Jacare.
Yeah. So overall, I got nothing else, Josh. I'm just going to continue to lift a bunch of weights and watch Strongman like I've been watching this last week. And
I'm going to watch video games and eat my sadness.
Nice. So it's a terrible way to end the show. hope everyone's having a happy holiday, and we will see you soon. As always in the show, I'm your host, Manger, the co-host.
Josh.
And we are the Grappling Rewind. What?
Happy Hanukkah.
Oh, I thought you just messed up my outro. Happy Hanukkah. And we are the Grappling Rewind. We will see you on the mats whenever that is. Stay safe. If you like the show, please consider sharing it on Facebook with the folks at your gym. It's the best way that we grow the show, and we really appreciate it. You can reach out to us on email.
We also have Instagram. We have Facebook. We have Twitter. We have Google+.
Until that shuts down.
We have a website.
If you have an event you would like to have us cover, please let us know. If you have a name, like most people do, and you'd like to have us stop butchering it,
let us know.
Reach out to us. The show is also available on YouTube, Spotify, in addition to iTunes and every other podcast service. We very much appreciate your time, and thank you.